CJAM-FM 99.1, CJAM.ca. Community radio bridging boundaries between Windsor and Detroit.
Hello, you are listening to Magna Carta Pro Bono Radio on CJAM 99.1 FM. This is Corey, your host for the afternoon, along with my co-host, Anita. A quick recap of Pro Bono Students Canada as an organization. So if you're tuning in for the first time, I'd like to extend a warm welcome and just recap what our organization, Pro Bono, is all about. So since Windsor has a focus on social justice, Pro Bono fits perfectly in with these services by matching law student volunteers with organizations to deliver legal services which are in great need but lack the sufficient resources. All Pro Bono projects are under the supervision of a lawyer. Pro Bono not only provides law students with volunteer opportunities to develop legal skills, but also has a positive impact on the legal profession by promoting the value of pro bono service. Further, it aims to increase access to justice across schools in Canada through its 22 chapters within Canada in 23 different law schools. For those of you who were with us the last time we spoke, we talked with the Only Yes Means Yes project, specifically Kira and Jeff from Windsor Law. And if you missed that discussion and want to gain access to it, you can look at our archives online.
Before we get into any legal topic discussion, we just want to let everyone know that anything said on this radio talk show are opinions of those people only and do not reflect CJAM as a radio station. The information provided on this episode is not to be construed as legal advice, but rather legal information. Later in our show, we will have Amy and Samantha from the CAS and Parental Rights Project to discuss their project and the issues surrounding the topic of parental rights. In the news lately, there have been some discussion of issues that relate to parental rights.
On October 18th of 2019, CBC News published an article entitled "Windsor, Ontario Mother Feels Helpless in Parental Child Abduction." Why we think this is important is because it shows that the issues that we're going to be talking about today are not something that just affect a certain communities. It impacts our own community. So that's why we've brought in Amy and Samantha, and we'll be discussing these issues surrounding parental rights. So this article is about a couple who had shared custody, according to the mother, but the father allegedly took the two oldest children to Lebanon. Now, she's left with one child here in Windsor, and the mother has reached out to the government for help on this issue. It's important to note that all three kids were born in Windsor, Ontario, and do hold Canadian citizenship. So the relevance to this topic is how it shows that parental rights issues are occurring here in Windsor, but there are some differences. So the situation is not involving the Children's Aid Society, or herein referred to as the CAS, but it does involve the helplessness that happens when people do not have access to legal information on the topic of parental rights. I think it also shows, if you really get into the article, it really has a theme of showing how devastating it can be for a parent to have their children taken away. I think it's an interesting case because it shows the complexity of Canadian family law and how this is impacted when certain members of the family go overseas. So I have a few questions for you, Anita. Just, I know you read the article. I'd like to know what you think about it, and more so, how do you think not having legal information regarding parental rights makes people vulnerable?
Well, the article did stipulate that the mother actually came to Canada in late of 2018 with her children from Lebanon to, you know, create a new life for themselves and give them all those opportunities. So I think for immigrants, it's really scary to have something like this happen to them because they're not fully aware of, you know, all the legal rights surrounding parental rights and, you know, what can happen to their children when one spouse takes them without their permission, especially in this case when he decided to flee to Lebanon back with his children. So you can kind of feel the fear of a mother who has her children taken away from her and not really knowing where to turn at this point because, you know, a lot of people are not well versed in Canadian law, especially when it comes to children rights and parental rights.
Yeah, I think that's important because, as it said, she's a newcomer to Canada, but the kids are all Canadian citizens. So I could just imagine being new to a country and not being familiar with their legal system and knowing the rights that are offered and to protect you. So I think not having access to legal information regarding parental rights certainly makes people more vulnerable.
Yeah, and it's also dealing with, you know, the laws overseas. So we need to kind of see, you know, if someone does take your child away and flees to a different country, you know, what laws apply? How can we return the children back safely? Do both parents have a say? Because in this case, it is shared custody. So it's difficult to kind of wrap your mind around what a mother can do in this situation, given that her children have been taken away from her, but it has been taken away by the father.
Yeah, so I think that's important for why we're having Amy and Samantha come in. Because although they cannot give legal advice, they could certainly give you legal information and point you in the right direction and point others in the right direction for where to get that legal information to avoid that vulnerability and uncertainty that comes with situations like these.
Right, and that's why it's so important to have organizations like CAS in place around the nation because, you know, it can kind of give you a safe haven for your children depending on what the situation is, give you advice, you know, kind of grant you some kind of protection so you can have access to information and know what your rights are.
Yeah, CAS in itself as an organization is a very good organization there. They're doing a lot of important work that needs to be done here in Canada, protecting children. But it's also important, I think, to be doing the work that Amy and Samantha are doing, which is informing people of their rights when it comes to their parental rights regarding their interactions with CAS and other groups.
So what do you think about when, like, where do people learn their parental rights generally? So if it's, for example, in this case where the mother was a newcomer to Canada, it's not like she knew right away what the rights were or where she can turn to. Do you have any insights on that?
I'm trying to think whether you're taught it in school. I don't think you are. At least when I was in high school, there was, like, our law classes did not include a section on parental rights. I don't think they saw it as relevant. So I think ideally you'd say it would be taught in the schools, but I don't think that's a reality. Did you have it in your school? Were you taught about parental rights?
No, actually, there was nothing sort of like that. I do remember when I was younger, back in elementary school, they would have, you know, child protective services or members of certain organizations. They would actually come into the school and, you know, sit each of us down one-on-one and kind of ask us questions in terms of how's life at home, how do your parents treat you, you know, what goes on in day-to-day activities. And so I'm not sure if they were kind of fishing for information there to, you know, log in and see if children are being protected and taken care of, but that's the extent of my knowledge of parental rights. I know that it can be taken away from you quite quickly, but then again, it's also hard for parents to know what their rights are, if there's a zone of risk, even in terms of, you know, hitting, spanking your kid. Like, how do you know where the zone of risk is there, or if your child can be taken away from you in that sense? But in this case, obviously, abduction is more serious and warrants further investigation.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. I don't think you're taught it in school, and probably because of the age, right? You're like, I'd say, what, like 16, 17 when you're in high school, in the latter years. So they probably don't believe that it's a necessity to be teaching you parental rights at 16 or 17, with the assumption that you're probably going to be having kids later on. But that's not necessarily true. So I guess that's a good discussion whether there's a gap in the public legal education for parental rights. What do you think about that, Anita?
I definitely don't think it's something that is taught to people, especially in the younger years or even to newcomers. That's why it's important to, you know, maybe establish certain organizations to help newcomers or parents in general in Canada to kind of understand what parental rights they do have, because obviously this information can be very expensive to have to go through a lawyer. So again, in terms of access to justice, we want to make sure that everyone has availability to this kind of knowledge and know what their rights are at their fingertips.
Yeah, I think it's also pretty interesting here because unless you're familiar with it, CAS and parental rights seems outside of reality for a lot of people in terms of what they deal with on the day-to-day. But a lot of students here at law school have backgrounds in social work. So you hear about their previous experiences. Obviously, they're not giving details about the cases they worked on, but they talk about their experience working as a social worker and working with CAS or working in some cases against them. But it's interesting because it becomes a reality for people who work in that field.
Right, and what I find so interesting about this article, and it's a question that I would like to ask Amy and Samantha later on, is that in the article it's stipulated that the father, or actually the mother per se, fled Lebanon with her children to come to Canada, of course, to establish a better life and whatnot. So I'm wondering what kind of rights exist on, you know, that side of the story, because if a mother does flee Lebanon with her children and comes to Canada, you know, 1 year later the father does the same thing and goes back to the hometown, in terms of shared custody, you know, who has what rights or what's the most likely outcome?
Yeah, it's certainly a complex issue. But that's why Amy and that's why Samantha are going to be here to hopefully start clarifying what your rights are as a parent, specifically more so when it comes to working with CAS. So for those of you who are unfamiliar with CAS, there's a lot of information on their website in terms of what they do, their mission statement, how you can volunteer. But I'm just going to give a quick summary of some information found on their website. The Children's Aid Society, also known as CAS, they work in each community to help provide support to children and their families. We have one here in Windsor, Essex, and the CAS there is responsible for investigating allegations of child abuse, including neglect, and they also provide protective services to children, their families, as well as youth residing in Essex County. They're dedicated to advocating for quality services for children and families, and they've been around since 1899, and they're quite dedicated to strengthening the family unit. Children are admitted through two methods, either through a voluntary agreement or by a court order. And like I said, if anyone wants more detailed information on this, you can check it out on the CAS website. It's a very concise website. So looking at their mission statement, it says their mission statement is as follows. The Windsor-Essex Children's Aid Society is dedicated to the well-being and safety of every child by advocating for and partnering with our children, families, and communities. It mentions their director, Susan Easterbrook, and she's a director at CAS and has been a board director since September of 2017, and she currently sits on the Corporate Services Committee. She's a Windsor local, and she works as a lawyer and mediator, with her own practice pertaining to the area of law of estates and trust law. So pretty interesting stuff there for Susan. She completed her bachelor's, her MBA, and her law degree here at Windsor University. So a lot of connections to this local community. CAS has hubs in Windsor and has recently been in Leamington. So like I said before, there's a lot of information on their website with regards to fostering, adoption, volunteering. So if you're interested in those types of opportunities, be sure to check it out.
Yeah, for sure. The CAS, presents a lot of opportunities for families and their children. And so they've actually gained a lot of media traction because recently in the CBC, an article was published titled Children's Aid Increasing Efforts to Reunite Indigenous Youth with Family and Culture. So many of their efforts are directed towards reuniting Indigenous youth with their families, and preserving their identity and culture. So just back in December, the CAS teamed up with a pilot project with the Can-Am Indian Friendship Center to reunite Indigenous families. So instead of family visits for children in the system at the CAS offices, they're now being held at the Friendship Center so that children are united with their families and can be further exposed to their cultural identities and practice their traditions that have been, certainly taken away from them or even de-emphasized, which we know, Corey, has been the result of many years of oppression and discrimination within residential schools. And to me, it's still crazy to think about that the last school officially closed in 96. So this kind of here means that there's many Indigenous people today who are disassociated with their culture and traditional practices because they were taught different values and beliefs. So it's important to allow Indigenous children to be exposed to and experience their family practices as well as be proud of their cultural identities. So just recently, an Ontario Trillium Foundation granted the pilot project $75,000 in an effort to ensure Indigenous children are connected to their culture and understand their history. So there's, currently a fear that Indigenous children are losing their cultural connections and their mother language while being placed in the child welfare system. So there is a dire need to ensure that this fundamental cultural exposure remains and is encouraged through family reuniting. It was actually recorded in November of 2019 that more than 6% of the children in CAS were identified as Indigenous. So that's about 28 of the 443 children in CAS care, whereas in 2017, that percentage was actually over 12%. So the executive director of the CAS claims that this represents an overrepresentation of Indigenous children in care, but it is good to see that number go from 12% in 2017 to a mere 6% in 2019. So, there's an effort towards reconciliation here for sure, something that's been lacking in action. And again, you can find more information pertaining to the efforts of the pilot project if you search up Children's Aid Increasing Efforts to Reunite Indigenous Youth with Family and Culture. And again, this can be found on the CBC website.
Yeah, Anita, I think that's important. And I think that the number is decreasing, the amount of Indigenous kids in CAS care here and in Windsor. So I think that's important, and it's good to see that there's some progress there.
Yeah, and here at Corey and I are actually taught in our first year of law school Indigenous legal orders. Help us to kind of understand Indigenous cultural practices, the history behind the injustices that they had faced, and steps that we can take to ensure that their cultural identity is being preserved, especially in their youth, because that seems to be a more pressing problem. So hopefully efforts like this, like the pilot project, can be encouraged and new ideas can be initiated in an effort to preserve Indigenous culture and identity.
So Anita, just for anyone who's listening, and maybe if there's any law students listening from other schools, why don't you talk about how Indigenous Legal Orders was here at Windsor Law, because it is something fairly unique in that most law students in Ontario in first year take torts. But here at Windsor Law, they take in your first semester you take Indigenous Legal Orders, and in your second semester you take a course on access to justice. So it's a unique framework. Unique structure for learning the law. So what did you think of your Indigenous Legal Orders course, and what useful tools did you get out of that course?
So in ILO, that's what we call it for Indigenous Legal Orders, we did learn a lot of the history behind it. I remember in first week orientation, they kind of let us do a role play in terms of representing, you know, the children that have been taken away from their families at residential schools, and kind of, you know, help us to have that sympathetic feeling of what it's like to be taken away. And again, this pertains to the article that we were discussing earlier about the mother who had her ex-husband, you know, flee Canada with her children. You know, to have your children ripped apart from you and to not have that connection anymore obviously is very fearful. But at Windsor, I know Windsor Law does pride itself on its social justice in terms of law. So it's very interesting to gain that kind of exposure. I think it's quite needed as a foundation for any law student, because we need to understand that there are people who do not have proper access to justice, or they're overrepresented, or they're underrepresented. And, you know, how can we combat this? And more importantly, why this is. So why are there injustices? Why is there discrimination? Why are there people who are not being taken seriously within the legal community? And, you know, how we can help to remedy this. And I know we have a lot of great organizations here in the surrounding community, like CLA, so that's the clinic. And then we have, you know, programs like Pro Bono that help to kind of ensure that legal information is being presented to everybody, and to kind of advise of any programs that can help out.
Yeah, so it's definitely something fairly unique to Windsor Law to have this access to justice in Indigenous legal orders. And I think it can be useful. There's a lot of stuff you can pull out of those courses and make you a more culturally competent lawyer. At this point, we will take a short break, and we'll be right back with Magna Carta Pro Bono Radio after some messages.
Hey, University of Windsor students. Do you have late classes? Are you new in town, or just feel nervous or unsafe when walking alone? Download the Safe Lancer app and use FriendWalk. FriendWalk lets you send your location in real time to a friend so they make sure you get to your destination safely. If you or your friend suspects you are in danger, either of you can trigger a call to emergency services. When you reach your destination, finish your trip and disconnect safely. A message brought to you by the University of Windsor Campus Police Services. The Safe Lancer app is available for Android and Apple devices. The Green Bean Cafe is a hybrid space for artists, academics, and any others looking for a safe and open atmosphere to hang out, meet up, or do work. We offer a full food and drink menu with daily specials. And with a wide range of weekly events, the Green Bean Cafe is sure to fill the void. The Green Bean Cafe, supporting Pockets Full of Change since 2009. Located at 2320 Wyandotte Street West. Find us online at greenbeancoffee.ca.
And we're back. You're listening to CJAM 99.1 FM Pro Bono Radio, Magna Carta. Today we have here as our guests Amy and Samantha from the CAS and Parental Rights Pro Bono Project here in Windsor. Thank you both so much for coming in today, and we would love to get started with an intro of yourselves and why you decided to join PBSC in general.
Hi, my name is Samantha D'Souza Sun, and as mentioned, I am one of the PBSC students working on the Children's Aid Society and Parental Rights Program. Currently, I'm finishing up my first year here at Windsor Law School. Before that, though, I did my undergraduate degree at Queen's University, where I majored in politics, minored in history, and completed a certificate in law with the Queen's Faculty of Law. I was initially interested in law because I personally find alleviating the stress of others to be immensely rewarding. Also, I love reading, and as you guys will soon come to see, I love talking. So advocating for others honestly just seemed like the perfect fit for me, and I wanted to do that with a legal career. Law school is busy, though, and so why pro bono specifically? Well, prior to attending law school, I had no idea about the current access to justice issues. To quote Beverly McLaughlin, I was completely unaware of the access to justice crisis that Canada is currently facing. Once I understood the magnitude of this crisis, I felt passionate to help alleviate some of these barriers. PBSC allows law students to volunteer their time to help make legal information more clear and available for the people who need it most. And that's where I thought that I could be the most useful.
Well, thank you, Sam, for introducing yourself. Next, we're going to be hearing from Amy from the same project, and she's going to tell us a little bit about herself and why she decided to do pro bono.
Hi, so my name is Amy DeJure. I'm also, like Sam, a 1L at Windsor Law. Before coming to Windsor, I studied history at Laurentian University. I did a specialization in history, so I exclusively did history. And I didn't always want to go to law school. I did a lot of archival work before coming to law school. So I dealt with documents, translation of documents, all that kind of fun stuff. But I didn't really want to do a career where I focused on the words of dead people. I wanted to help people who are still alive deal with the hardest issues in their life. So law school made the most sense to me.
Well, that's interesting, Amy, wanting to work with the living. But so why Pro Bono Students Canada? Why did you decide to do that?
So community involvement's always been really important to me. I was really involved as an undergrad with community. I worked a lot with women's rights and as well as the 2015 federal election. So I wanted to continue community involvement in law school, and pro bono just made the most sense. It's a different way. It's a different approach. We get to provide people in our local area, so the area of Windsor, with information, legal information, and making the legal system more accessible to them was really important to me.
Thank you so much, Amy. It's great to hear your passion for pro bono. And I have a question for you, Sam. What is the project about? If you can just give us a little bit of background on the topic, the kind of people you deal with, and overall, generally, what your aims are.
So our project is about parental rights when parents are undergoing investigations with the Children's Aid Society. It focuses specifically on what legal rights these parents have and which legal rights they can exercise during the various levels of society involvement. We work with Donna Roy from the Windsor Youth Center, and I believe the main issue that our project addresses can be perfectly encapsulated by an article that Donna actually shared with us. So this article is entitled Visceral Grief, Youth Homeless Mothers, and Loss of Child Custody. This article compiled findings of 12 studies of mothers who relinquished their children. The authors found that while the mother's initial grief reactions were normal, these emotions persisted and often led to chronic, unresolved grief. Some of the studies found that mothers who had been separated from a child had more grief symptoms than those who had actually lost a child to death. So basically, mother-child separation is immensely difficult. This situation is only worsened when young parents face other barriers, such as homelessness and drug addiction. Many of the young parents who come into the Windsor Youth Center are facing these exact barriers. Our project seeks to provide some legal information to these parents, as often they feel lost when they're navigating the system with CAS, and they do not have the resources always to access the necessary legal aid that they need.
So, Samantha, what's PBSC's role in this matter?
Well, for this project, we work with a group of two other law students, and we research and prepare information, and we've now formatted that information into a brochure. Next to them, we had our supervising lawyer, Alexis Chernish. She's a local family lawyer to Windsor. We had her look over the research and then provide guidance so that we could finalize our work. And actually, in the next few weeks, we're planning to be presenting this research to the young parents at the Windsor Youth Center during their parental group on Tuesdays.
So, Sam, you mentioned she's a family lawyer. Does she have a specific specialization in this field?
Well, actually, yes. She is a child protection lawyer here in Windsor, so she's often very busy dealing with very important cases. But, yes, that's what she works in.
Sam, is there any particular reason you chose this specific topic?
Absolutely. So I've always been intrigued by family law. I think that it's a unique intersection between social work and law. Most of the time, when dealing with family law cases, you're actually choosing to help people in probably the most difficult part of their lives. So I figured that if I could make this turbulent time any less difficult for them, then I'm actually making a huge impact in their lives. But more specifically, I chose this topic because my father's actually worked as a CAS caseworker for many years before he entered social work. And I'd always understood this issue from his perspective of the Children's Aid Society. And so I personally wanted to challenge my current paradigm and understand the position of the parents who are fighting to keep the custody of their children, as opposed to just the perspective of the society.
That's a really interesting backstory, Sam. How about you, Amy, though? Did you have any special significance for why you joined this project?
So, like Sam, I had an interest in family law prior to law school, but and also like Sam, my interest is coming from somewhere personal, but I'm actually on the other side of the story. So my brother is a single parent, and he had to fight with the court system to get custody of both of his children. There was, on the children's mother's side, there was a lot of history of drug addiction and homelessness. And my brother had to navigate the court system and the whole CAS system without any knowledge of the system. He had to do it all on his own. There wasn't, you know, this was 10, 15 years ago, so there wasn't a lot of access and there wasn't a lot of resources to get into the system to understand what you were doing. So that kind of really inspired me to take on this project.
That's interesting. You both have some sort of special significance to the project. It's not just something you were plopped in by the law school to fit you in. That's nice. It shows that you have some sort of personal connection, and I'm sure it impacts the work you do.
So, Amy, can you actually give our listeners an overview of the gap in public legal education and where people can access parental rights and find out what they are?
Yeah, so that's the issue, right? Like, there is a gap in legal education. Generally, we don't really teach much of the education or the legal system in our education system, right? Like, you have your grade 10 civics class, which from what I remember was very boring and understimulating. And then you don't really get much further into the legal system unless you decide to continue. So you can take a grade 12 law class, which my sister's in a grade 12 law class right now, and they're not really talking much about the family law aspects. They really just focus on how court works and how criminal court works, and then the legislative system. So they don't go into family law very much at all. So other than that, you're not really exposed to the system until you find yourself in the system. And at this point, you're at your most vulnerable state, and there's not a lot of accessible resources for people who are facing financial issues, homelessness, domestic violence, drug addiction. And lawyers are expensive, right? Like, we have billable hours, filing fees, and then there's other court fees, backlog and delays, like when you go to court and then they delay your date, right? And then on top of that, all this information is not in plain language. So you need a lawyer to kind of access it. So it can be really hard for anyone who doesn't either have the money or doesn't have the legal education to understand these terms.
No, yeah, for sure. Thank you for providing that information for us. But I did have a question. What age do you think children should kind of be, or teens, youths should be exposed to these rights in terms of family law and navigating the court system?
Yeah, so I mentioned you have the mandatory grade 10 civics, and then you have that optional grade 12 class. But I'm not really sure that the answer lies within the educational system. I think it's more of a legal system change that needs to happen. So our one of our program coordinators, Donna from the Windsor Youth Center, she mentioned to us that a lot of the youth that we're creating this pamphlet for, a lot of them haven't finished high school. They have limited language skills. So the education system is not going to give everybody access, right? This is more of an access to justice issue. So we want to be thinking about encouraging lawyers to be more aware of the accessibility issues and maybe encourage them to do pro bono work, getting involved in their communities that way, teaching their clients that way. or we've actually just learned about something in our Access to Justice class this past week. It's something called unbundled retainers. So normally when you hire a lawyer, you are signing on for the whole thing. You're signing on for them to do all their research. You're signing on for them to do mediation or go to court for you. You're signing on for the entire package. Well, an unbundled retainer gives the client the ability to decide which of the legal services they'd like to take advantage of. And this is really beneficial for people who have limited financial means.
So this is a question for you, Sam. How does your project work to address these issues surrounding access to justice?
So that's an excellent question. So as mentioned earlier, this project was initially proposed by Donna Roy, the program manager at Windsor Youth Center. And so basically the issue was Ms. Roy was realizing that there was a lot of young parents coming into the youth center who were in need of legal assistance. So she decided that it would be beneficial to have a group of law students come in and to try and provide some basic legal information to these young parents so that they can have guidance when navigating the court system and dealing with CAS. From Ms. Roy's input, we realized that the main problem for our project was making the legal information accessible to these young parents. So as mentioned by my counterpart, Amy, some of these young parents have limited language skills and have actually not finished high school. So a big focus for our presentation was trying to make legal jargon understandable to young parents. And so a lot of our brochure is actually explaining important terms that the parents will find in the statutes and just various places in the Family Law Act so that they are better aware of their situation.
So you're translating legalese?
Oh, absolutely. That's what we're attempting to do.
So Sam, you mentioned that your pro bono group creates these pamphlets. So I'm wondering, are they primarily directed towards the parents or the children or both?
Excellent question, Anita. So the pamphlets are actually directed just to the parents. It's through pretty much any parent who has to deal with the society, but we are targeting it towards young parents. Our pamphlets do not at all suffice for accurate legal aid. However, it's our attempt to provide some legal information so that these parents can navigate a system that is honestly quite daunting to them. And seeing as preserving custody of their children is the main motivating factor for most of these parents, we just want to provide a pamphlet that can provide some base information to make them feel comfortable engaging in this process.
And how has the how was the feedback when distributing these pamphlets?
So we haven't distributed them yet. We are going to in the next month. We are going to distribute them at our presentations, though, because the pamphlets even themselves are fairly filled with legal jargon, unfortunately. And so we're hoping to really foster the understanding in our presentations, which will be at the Windsor Youth Center, to the parents group, because the pamphlets alone, unfortunately, don't provide the level of understanding that I think our parents will need.
No, I think that's a great idea to, you know, give a presentation and then kind of give this pamphlet at the mm-hmm. end so that they know who to refer to or kind of remember what they learned in that session.
Yeah.
So, Amy, can you speak to your experience so far? And can you kind of mention to our listeners any challenges that you've had at this time?
So our experience has been really enlightening, really inspiring, but we have faced some challenges. So I think our biggest challenge has just been the sheer amount of information that we needed to condense on such a small pamphlet. So we primarily dealt with the Family Law Act. So that's a piece of Ontario legislation. And the act itself is so long. It's so extensive. And we had to condense that on a six-sided pamphlet. So that in and of itself was very overwhelming. But not only that, just the court process itself. So that's additional on top of the Family Law Act. And that process is very long as well. So just condensing that was a challenge. But we did manage to get the important information on there that we felt was most relevant to our audience.
Okay, great. And speaking to that important information, Sam, is there anything specific from the brochure that you think is relevant to highlight here?
Absolutely. So I think one term that all young parents should know is a child in need of protection. So this is a term that the CAS will use when they believe on reasonable or probable grounds that a child is in need of protection. So this means that a child is either in an unsafe situation that the caregiver or parent is responsible for, or that the caregiver or parent has not properly provided adequate services or treatment for the harm that has occurred to this child. The harm can be physical, emotional, or sexual. And the other thing that I believe is very important to highlight to young parents is that CAS initial involvement can happen with or without a warrant. So with a warrant, the CAS worker can enter the premises and remove the child. However, this can also occur without a warrant. And so this can happen if the child is in need of protection, as described earlier, if the child is less than 16, and if there would be a substantial risk to the child's health or safety in the time needed to obtain a warrant. So the main difference between the warrant and without a warrant is the CAS worker has to prove that there would be substantial risk to the child in the time that is taken to obtain this warrant. So that was my research, which was on the initial involvement of the CAS, but Amy can speak to more what happens after the society has actually removed a child from parents' care, and she speaks more to the extended care orders.
That's great, Sam. Thank you so much. Amy, can you speak to that?
Yeah, so like Sam said, my research focused primarily on what happens when CAS removes a child, and that's called an extended care order. So CAS will place that order, and that's when they'll come and remove the child. So something that I find a lot of parents probably wouldn't be aware of is that when CAS comes to remove your child, you can ask that CAS worker for a piece of identification and their business card, just so you're comfortable knowing that this is what's going on and this person says who they say they are. You can ask also if there's any police officers present, you can ask for their names and badge numbers as well, and they have to provide that to you. You can also ask the CAS worker where they're taking their child, but they don't have to give you that information, but you can ask and they may tell you. You can also provide CAS with any names, numbers of relatives or friends that are in a position to care for your child. Another part of my research talked about what you can do right after this all happens. So we suggest that you contact a lawyer if you can, but if you can't, you can choose to represent yourself in this whole proceeding, and we do provide some resources for you should you choose that option. There is a number on the back of our pamphlet. It's called 211 Ontario. This is a telephone service that provides you with 24/7 information, and it's also a referral hotline that can tell you where to get legal help. And they have a website as well. It's www.211ontario.ca. Our pamphlet provides a lot of other resources as well for these parents.
That's great, Amy. Thank you so much for providing that information for our listeners. Sam, how can guests help, perhaps those who aren't law students? Is there a donation? Are there any other volunteer opportunities?
Great question, Anita. So I think that's an important point. Not everyone has to be a law student here to help out. The work we do is for the Windsor Youth Center. Every night, the Windsor Youth Center offers a dinner for youth in the community. And so I would recommend that listeners actually volunteer to help them there, because they would always appreciate the assistance. And we know the management team there, and they're wonderful people. So it'd be a great way to get involved. For those interested, the Windsor Youth Center is located on Wyandotte Street, and their doors are open until 10 p.m. every night.
Thank you, Sam. I do hope people actually get involved. And speaking of family law and all that stuff, I know a lot of people have actually been on Netflix watching Marriage Story. Now, I'm wondering, Do you think that's an accurate representation of family lawyers?
We'll see. I personally love that movie. I thought it was very well done. It was very interesting to see that sort of corporate side of family law, which is unfortunate. I think there are a lot of aspects of family law that can be precisely that, and can end up resulting in years long battles that really just end up in exorbitant legal fees. However, I think the work specifically that we do with child advocacy and more on that side of things is less so a money grab, and it's more actually about protecting. But I do completely concede that when emotions get involved, things can become drawn out and the legal fees honestly just become exorbitant at that point.
Yeah, for sure. I think that movie really captured the realities of divorce and dealing with family lawyers. There was actually a quote in the movie which I found so interesting. It was, "Criminal lawyers see bad people at their best, and divorce lawyers see good people at their worst."
Yes, I find that so interesting. As I mentioned before, I did my certificate in law at Queen's, and I spoke to a lot of the professors there about family law, and because it was something I was very passionate about. And one of the family lawyers said to me, "You are never going to see the good in your client. You're going to see your client at their absolute worst. And then a few months later, you'll see them smiling in a superstore and you'll think, who is this? I don't recognize this person. They were at their absolute worst when they were with me." And so I think that a lot of the power from family lawyers comes from the fact that they're able to deal with people at their worst, and that they're able to try and make the worst moment in some people's life incrementally better. And whether or not that comes with exorbitant legal fees, as we mentioned before, is debatable. But I think the true value in their work comes from the fact that they try to make that horrible, devastating moment minimally better.
Yeah, for sure. And so I know that a lot of the time, you know, you're dealing with people a very difficult time in their lives. And so even in the film, I thought it was quite interesting and heartbreaking, actually, that even when the mother, I can't recall her name right now, she had a drink, the lawyer brought it up as if she had a drinking problem. And so you're kind of twisting the facts, you're manipulating the story, because of course you want one side to win. And that's why sometimes I think family law gets this rep that it's really cold hearted work. But then again, you know, you're trying to do the best for your client, and every scenario can be ugly.
Absolutely. And I think that zero-sum mentality, as though there is a winner in family law, is honestly the main culprit to blame for this, because I don't believe that there is a winner ever in these very difficult situations. And some lawyers have actually chosen to acknowledge that, and they go in with the idea that they're actually only going to do arbitration, and that they kind of aren't going to take this very aggressive approach. And so I think it really depends on the approach that both parties decide to take. But you're absolutely right that in the quest to kind of have some sort of winner out of a horrible situation, the facts are absolutely turned and twisted.
Well, thank you, Sam, for your insight. But I have one final question for both you and Amy. What has been the most enjoyable part of this experience with you working for pro bono, or volunteering rather, with the CAS and Parental Rights Group?
I'm honestly very proud to be a part of the Windsor chapter of pro bono. I believe we've accomplished so much, and it's truly inspiring to me how committed all my peers are to access to justice. And I believe that every day I see amazing colleagues who are trying to break down those barriers, and I personally find that very motivational. And so I think if I had to pinpoint one experience from this entire project, I would just say that it's allowed me to see the real life relevance of legal research. Back in September, in our legal research and writing courses, I honestly was bored to death. I did not see the purpose to it, really. It just felt like learning how to Google, and I didn't understand it. But working in this type of capacity, I see the true benefit to legal research, and I see that it is a profound privilege to have access to these legal databases, and it is a profound privilege to be able to use them. And I think from this experience, I've learned that I want to use that privilege that I have to create change in people's lives and hopefully make it a little bit better. Because once again, I believe that access to justice isn't just an important thing to have. It's a fundamental right, and our legal system can't work without it. So I think what I've enjoyed the most about my experience with pro bono is the fact that everyone has committed themselves to breaking down these barriers, and it helps me see the real life relevance of this research.
Yeah, for me, I definitely have to echo everything Sam said. Our team has been amazing. It's great that everyone is so committed to our access to justice issues. But for me, I think the best part of this project and being involved with Pro Bono Students Canada and the Windsor chapter specifically is, as someone who's kind of grown up around the area, I'm originally from Chatham. It's really rewarding to see how our legal research and the things we're doing in law school can really help this specific community. So I'm really looking forward to when we're going to be presenting this to the youth parents at the Windsor Youth Center. And I'm excited to see how our information and our work is going to impact their journey.
Well, thank you, Amy and Sam. That was interesting stuff you were talking about, and we're really happy you could make it out here today out of your busy schedule. Yeah, so we really appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having us.
Thank you very much. I feel like it's very important to give a platform to these access to justice issues, and you guys do it in a thoughtful and interesting way, and so we're just honored to be a part of this.
To conclude, we are going to play a couple songs. First will be the Arcade Fire's Windowsill, followed by the Arkells, Systematic. Thanks for listening.
Set the flames free, the wind.
That was Windowsill by the Arcade Fire, and that was requested by Danielle from Hamilton, Ontario. Now we're going to play the Arkells Systematic.
They've all gone bad now. They're spoiled. They're tainted.